Everyone, this is Roland. Today I want to talk about relationships, because relationships is really what it's all about. You see, the human race began back in the Garden of Eden, and they messed up. Adam ate of the forbidden fruit at the behest of his wife, Eve, and what he basically did is he crossed the metaphysical threshold. That's right. Whenever we do something wrong, whether you take drugs, whether you steal something, whether you commit adultery, whether you commit some sort of an act that's not right, you're crossing a metaphysical threshold. You're going from the kingdom of good to the kingdom of bad. It's like from a nice country like the United States to an awful country. A tyrannical country. And as soon as you cross the border and go into that country, you become subject to that country. See, as long as you're here in the United States, we have freedoms, we have a beautiful way of life here. But if you go to a country in the world ruled by tyranny, there's so many different kinds of tyranny. I don't even have to state which ones they are. They're just terrible, terrible, tyrannical governments. Well, as soon as you cross over the border, see, and you give your allegiance to that country, let's say you decided to betray the United States and go over to the other side. Well, once you go over to that other country, now you belong to that country. They own you, and the rights, see, and the freedoms that you had when you were an American are no longer yours. So you could see how a person could go to a country and give up their American allegiance and then become subject to that country and then all of a sudden find themselves in big trouble, be falsely accused of something and end up thrown in jail or something awful happening to them, and they would have no recourse. You see, you could see how it could become a nightmare very quickly. It could become a nightmare very quickly. I'm sure you've seen movies or you've read novels about awful, awful countries where there's all manner of terrible things happening, in torture and imprisonment and false accusations and re-education camps and all kinds of lies and bails and just terrible things. Rapes, pillages, murders, violence, cruelty, see? And terrible, terrible oppressive tyranny where you're not free to speak. You have to walk around and with eyes lowered and you dare not speak the truth, because if you speak the truth, someone will report you. And then you get reported, and then you're called in and accused of something. And before you know it, you're in a prison camp for years and under terrible conditions, living in a dark, damp cell in freezing cold. And see, I'm sure you can imagine how that could happen. You've seen movies, you've read novels, and you've heard real life stories of things like that happening in these awful countries. So that's exactly what happens, so to speak. When a human being crosses that threshold. See, there's an invisible line between right and wrong. There's right and there's wrong. Okay, now I can't always tell you, for each individual situation, there's millions and millions and millions of situations. I can't tell you, you know, ahead of time, necessarily what the right action is in the circumstance. But, you know, when you face it, you check with your conscience, you check with your intuition, and be guided by your conscience, see? And if your conscience warns you, no, you shouldn't do that, see? You shouldn't step over that line, you shouldn't have promiscuous sex, you shouldn't take that drug, see? You shouldn't take that bribe, you shouldn't steal that money, you shouldn't go join that group. See, whatever it says, you shouldn't get involved, you shouldn't go to that party. If you sense not to do something, but you step over that line, and you go ahead and do it. Now you become subject to the side that enticed you over. And there's an invisible line, and believe me, evil people, wicked people, see, and evil itself, and yes, there is such a thing as evil, are very much aware of that line. And that's why they want you to step over. See, why is it they always want to entice you to take drugs and have promiscuous sex? And why is it always like that? Well, drink too much and party too much and do wrong. Why gamble and do wrong things? Why are they always encouraging you to go for these illicit pleasures and forbidden experiences? You know, to get a high, to take some psychedelic drug and to get some high. See? And it can be more subtle. It can be tempted to join some strange group or go to some to some strange practices somewhere. See, it's always subtle. It can be gross, but there's always a line, and they want you to cross that line, because they know once you cross the line and you partake and participate, see, now they own you. And now you've basically, that's how hell enters into people's lives. See, you wonder about people, how they're tormented, you know, tormented by awful thoughts and nightmares and voices, and, you know, as they go through life, awful things happen. You wonder how they can be so tormented. Well, somehow hell entered into their life and entered into their being. Hell entered into their being. Okay? Now, how does it get in there? Well, there's many ways. As I just said, crossing that invisible line between good and evil, that metaphysical line. See? Well, now, when you were a little kid, you had a very strong sense of it. When you were a little kid, if you were going to do something wrong, you were going to steal something. Maybe you're going to steal, I don't know. I'll just make it something innocent and simple. You were going to steal a cookie. Well, what happened? Your heart started beating. Your heart started beating fast, and see, what did you feel? You felt some. See, you knew deep down that you were doing something wrong. Okay, so now you see that there is such a thing as right and wrong. It's very clear. It's clear to little children. Although little children are very suggestible, they can be easily misled. Young people can easily be misled. They're emotional and suggestible. We're suggestible by nature, gullible by nature. See, that's the other way that we are tempted over to the other side, see? And that is that if we're gullible, then everybody says, come on, go, let's do this. Let's do this wrong thing. Let's take these drugs. Let's have this promiscuous sex. Let's do this, let's do that, see? And then they kind of make it seem like it's fun or cool or everybody's doing it. And so you're very suggestible, especially nowadays. Kids are very group-oriented. You know, they come from homes where there's no dad. There's no dad. They cling to the group for support and for comfort and for ego reinforcement. So if the group does something, then they're going to do it too, because they want to be part of the group. They don't want to be ostracized. They don't want to feel like an outsider. They don't want to be rejected, so they join in. See? But when they do, see, then they're always asked to do something wrong. What about all these places where, you know, you join some club or some group or some sorority or some, what do they call those? Not sororities, but you know what I mean, those campus clubs and so on. Why is it that you're always required to do something wrong, or you join a gang? They always require you to do something wrong, something degrading. Why is that? See, because they want you to commit the wrong, and then you become subject to them. See, you no longer feel the same after you've done certain things. Maybe not stealing a cookie, that's not so bad. Little kids will steal a cookie, okay, that's not so bad. But then how about promiscuous sex? How about taking a drug, smoking marijuana? So you know if you've experienced that when you've done that, after you've crossed that line, the next morning you feel different, or you take some psychedelic drug. See, the next morning you feel different. Something has changed. You're not the same anymore. You feel some kind of an emptiness in your being, some kind of a hollowness in your being. See, and you don't feel as close to your parent. Now your parents ask you, what were you doing last night? See, and you're ashamed. You hide it. You deny it. See? So now you have begun to change. You're no longer the same person anymore. Something else has entered in. And then strangely, you start to find yourself going back to that thing again. See? And there's two reasons why you go back. Three reasons. One reason you go back is because, see, now you had a hypnotic experience, got involved in something, and it has become part of you. See, well, first of all, post-hypnotically, it calls you back. And secondly, because of your guilt in reality for having done it. Now, if you go back to it, then your consciousness is lowered, and you immerse yourself in the experience to escape from the shame and the anxiety and the guilt for what you did, see, by immersing yourself in it. But the other reason is that there's something about it that, like I said, it owns you. As a matter of fact, you become stamped by it, branded by it. Something of it enters you. Something of the identity enters you. See, whatever it was that enticed you over, the spirit in them and behind them, a little bit of it entered into you when you went over to that side, see? And so you become changed in its image. So now the only way you can get approval, the only way you can get reinforcement, the only way you can grow is through more of that, to become more of that, and eventually to become filled with that spirit that enticed you over, see? All right, so now you see how that is. So now you see that we have these little moments in life. You know, you go about your business, you go through your day, you go to work, you study, you have lunch, you do this, you do that, you exercise, you do all these things, but ever so often there comes a little moment, a little metaphysical moment, see, where there's something, some temptation is offered, see, and then you either go for it or you step back. See, you step back. If you step back, you're safe. And temptation can operate in so many different ways. See, at a moment when there's a potential danger, see, evil can make its approach in your mind and whisper something to you. Go for it. Go do it. Quick, do it. See, that can be evil entering your mind. There was recently a story here near where I live, where a lady... two young ladies were crossing railroad tracks. He was coming a train. They crossed the railroad tracks. One lady dropped her cell phone on the track. She went back to get it, and she was hit by the train and killed. See, she never should have gone back. I'm sure the cell phone was between the rails anyway, just laying in the gravel. It would have been okay. They could have just safely waited, gone and, you know, a good distance away and safely waited until the train was gone. Then she could have gone back and got her phone, but she went back right away. She went back and got it just before the train was there and was killed. See, that impulse, where does he come from? The impulse. See? Well, you see how it could have been. You can untoward influence suddenly making its approach. So you got the idea? All right. So now you see. So now how does evil enter? People, like I said, people's lives become a living hell. And then they have something inside of them that's tormenting them from within. Now how does it get in there? Well, I've given you examples, you know, taking drugs, committing adultery, promiscuous sex, things like that can get in those ways. Stealing, lying, cheating. But there's another way. Another way that you probably already know what I'm going to say, but haven't said it yet, and it's through hate. But let's not even use the word hate, because a lot of people say, I don't hate anybody. No, but we resent. See, that's hate. Resentment is a little bit of hatred. So how do we fall? For a lot of kids, for many, many, many kids, the way they fell, their first fall was not through taking a drug or promiscuous sex. Or stealing something. You know how it was? It was resenting their parents. See? Resenting their parents. Resenting their mom. Resenting their dad. Now, why would little kids resent their parents? The reason is, in so many cases, because the parents are rotten. A dad is not there. Or he's a drunk. Or he's violent. See? Or he's a wimp. See? He's not there for the child and mother. See, maybe mother's confusing, or she's bossy, or she's mean. See, pressuring, or mean, or teasing, taunting, see. Or maybe she's seductive. See, there's so many things that are improper. So maybe she's pressuring the child or bossing the child around or giving the child a hard time, and dad just sits there like a wimp and says nothing. He lets it happen. Or maybe dad is doing something that's not right. He's being cruel or mean or something, and mom sits there and she lets it happen, you see? Or both of them are rotten. They're taking drugs, or they're, see, or mom is bringing strange men into the home. There's just so many different things that they could be doing. Or they're hypocrites. See, they're out and out evil and bad and wrong. Or they're hypocrites. You know, they give the child a hard time and force the child to go to its room for a timeout and force the child to apologize and force the child to make reparations for some little thing it did. It accidentally did some little thing. The parent does really bad things, sits around using bad language and yelling and screaming and spending all of their time watching football or buying lottery tickets or going to the gambling casinos. And then the child does one little thing and they dump all over the child. See, so that hypocrisy tempts the child to hate the parent. See? Or the parents are just weak and misguided. See, and they don't have... There's something wrong, there's something missing, or there's something wicked. Remember I said that hell gets into people? Some people, you know, one guy said, there's hell in that woman. That woman's full of the devil. Well, yeah, she probably is. A lot of women are full of the devil. You remember in the Garden of Eden? It was the serpent. She spoke through Eve. So, back in the days of the Old West, like you see in the old Western movies, there was a bar and there was a sign over the door of the bar. And it said, men are fools and women are devils in disguise. Men are fools, women are devils in disguise. See? Remember that Marty Robbins song, Devil Woman? Remember? Devil woman, let go of me. Devil woman, let me be. And leave me alone, I want to go home. Remember that one? Beautiful song, Marty Robbins. So you get the idea. You get the idea. People are full of the devil. They're teasing, they're naughty, they're seductive. And they can be oh so charming. See? They lead you astray like the Pied Piper. Remember the fairy tale about the Pied Piper of Hamelin? And the children were all in the village, and they were good children. Here comes the Pied Piper playing the flute with a clever song. And pretty soon all the children are following the Pied Piper away. He's leading the children away. See? So our children, yes, children are close to God, and they do have their intuition. They do. But it should be validated on the outside. See, little children, they know what's right. Deep down in their heart, they know what's right. And that's what the parent is for, especially father. Father should validate outside what the child knows on the inside. Deep in his heart, deep down, the child knows what's right. Knows the difference between good and bad and right and wrong. And the child knows. And so that should be validated by the parent. See? But when the parent contradicts that, see? The parent contradicts it. The little child knows it. You know, knows about God and good and so forth. And then the little child goes to school, and there it's at school he said, well, there is no God, or maybe there's no God, and we're all just evolving from the slime through evolution, and we're just basically animals. And you see, totally contradicting what the child knows in his heart. A lot of children have become confused. See, they become confused. In fact, there's a hypnotic technique called the confusional technique. I think it was Erickson, one of the pioneers Dr. Erickson, Milton Erickson, I think, talked about the confusional technique. He would just start talking and talking in a very confusing way, and that confusing thing would just totally boggle a person's mind, and then they would be easily hypnotized, see? So people are confused, see? And then they become hypnotized, and then they just follow. They lose their way, they don't know anymore, and then they just follow what they're told, and then they're misled. So that's why a parent is supposed to validate what the child knows in his heart, see? But a lot of times children come from homes where the parents themselves are confused, or the parents contradict what the child knows. See, let's suppose, for example, a simple situation. A little child comes along, mommy, asks a question. Children love to ask questions. And mommy says, shh, don't bother me. I'm trying to text this message to my friend. But mommy, I said, don't bother me. Do you understand? See, now the little child knows, deep in his heart, the little child knows that mommy's being mean. She's being impatient. She's being selfish. See, she doesn't have love. See, the child knows all of that. Okay? But then mommy contradicts it. See, mommy wasn't being mean, but I was busy, and you bothered me. See, making it seem like the child is bad for just asking an innocent question, which children will come and ask questions. So you see how it's confusing. And it's wicked. It's confusing and it's wicked. And it tempts the child to hate. Now, what's wrong with hating? It's crossing that metaphysical line. Resenting, especially resenting our parents. Remember it says we're not to resent our parents. Honor your parents. In other words, honor the station of motherhood and fatherhood. Mother and father, they have their station in life. Like a judge has a station. A policeman has a station, see? They have their station. And maybe they're not perfect. Maybe they're imperfect. Or maybe they're even flat out wrong. Nevertheless, they have that station, so we don't hate them. We're told not to hate our parents. That's very important. And another reason why we're not to hate people, especially our parents, but not resent anybody, is because people are created in the image and likeness of God. We're not supposed to hate other people, human beings created in the image and likeness of God. See, when we hate them, we're committing a forbidden act. We're committing a forbidden act. Remember Christ said, you know, that people, he said, you're not supposed to, what, thou shalt not kill, steal, you know, all these things. But he said, even somebody that says, you know, a hateful word about their brother in his heart, someone who hates his brother, in other words, or hates another person, he said it was just almost like committing, like killing them, like committing murder. Because it's hate. See, hate is a forbidden act. And hate, resentment of other people, resentment, it's actually, and often it's also a roundabout way of hating God. See, we hate God, we resent God, we resent other people because other people are created in his image. See, that's why the devil hates people, because they're created in the image of, in God's image. See, that's why he hates them. So therefore, we mustn't resent other people. So the very first way that most children fall is they hate their parents, resent their parents, or resent their dad, or their mom, or both of them. And then as soon as we resent, we step over that line, we've committed a forbidden act, and we feel guilty. Parents, little children know they're not supposed to resent their parent, so they feel guilty. So then they're extra nice to the parent, and they get into the whole guilt thing. But the other thing is that a lot of times parents are so confusing, so cruel, so viciously or stupidly wrong or in error or messing up or not even there for the child, gone and so on, that they tempt the child to just really, really have a huge, huge resentment, many little resentments or a big resentment against their parents. And then the child looks for love because now the child feels empty. See, when you hate other people, you cut yourself off from love, from God's love from within. You cut yourself from your own ground of being, from which you could have grown and flowered to become an Einstein or a Madame Curie, see, or George Washington or Margaret Thatcher, Paul. Instead, you're cut off, and now you feel empty. You don't feel the love anymore because you've cut yourself off from the love through hating. So you can't love and hate at the same time. When you hate another person, when you resent another person, when you resent, you cut yourself off. It's like turning off the switch. Now you feel empty. Now you feel needy. Now you feel unloved. So what we should do is go quietly and become quiet with our conscience. Feel the pain of conscience, the pain of seeing our error in the light, in God's inner light of truth, and reconcile with our conscience quietly within. Reconcile with our conscience. Bear the little bit of pain of seeing our wrong. Let our conscience rub your nose. Let your conscience rub your nose in what you did a little bit, and then you'll feel the pain. Then the pain becomes sadness when you're sorry about what you did. See, and then the sorrow goes away, and then joy returns, and the clouds blow away and the sky becomes blue and the sun is shining again, see? But most of us, we don't reconcile. We don't want to admit we're wrong. We don't reconcile with conscience, or we don't know how, or we're not ready yet. See, we're not ready. We're not ready to reconcile with conscience. So we go out and look for love from other people because we're totally externalized anyway. See, we've already been hypnotized by other people, hypnotized by loving them and hating them. See? Being led astray by them. So we keep going back to them. So we look for love from them. So then the young people go out and look for a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Instead of finding love, they find abuse. Use and abuse. We go out in the world and we look for things. For clothes, for money. See, we look to food for love. See, it's the inner emptiness. One lady wrote a book called Women and or God and Food, or Women, God and Food, or something like that. She's a very well-known speaker on the subject, very popular. She's written books on the subject. I can't think of her name right now, but it's a very good book. Nice Jewish lady, I think. A PhD lady wrote a book called Father Hunger. Excellent, excellent book, because they see the relationship between feeling unloved and having a poor relationship with your father, and then looking to food as a substitute love. See, they see that. So when we don't have a good relationship with our father, when a father is not there for us, when we resent our parents, see, or when we commit forbidden acts, we're not living properly, we feel empty, we feel unloved. And so we look for love of the world. So we look for drug love, sex love, money love, possession love, music love, entertainment love, see? Excitement love, sports love, you know, watching sports and gambling and drinking and food love. That works. All right, so now you got the idea. So you mustn't resent your parents anymore. Don't resent your parents. Forgive your parents. Let go of your grudge against them. See that they were wrong? Maybe, yes, they were wrong. Maybe they were very wrong. Maybe they were wicked. Maybe they knew what they were doing. Maybe they didn't. A lot of people don't know. They, too, were victims. Someone had done it to them. All they did was turn around and do unto others what had already been done to them. They didn't know any better. Nobody ever loved them. Nobody ever explained things the way I'm explaining it to you. See? So forgive them. Forgive your parents. Forgive everyone. See, and then after you've forgiven your parents, you'll be able to go back to your parents and say, hey, you did a rotten thing. These are the things you did to me, and I hated you, but I don't hate you anymore. See, I forgive you. All I want you to do is admit what you did and be sorry. See, then maybe you can be friends again. If they don't want to admit they did you wrong, then just shake the dust from your feet and go about your business. Go about your life. You'll be free. You'll be free of it. Let go of the resentment. You'll be free. I have a nice lecture called How to Forgive and Forget. Have an excellent lecture. If you go to talktoapastor.org or commonsensecounseling.org, look under lectures and you'll see how to forgive and forget. Excellent. Okay? All right. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's lecture. And until next time, this is Roland saying bye-bye.